Echo from the Ages.
Many primitive tribes had no other government than that of each family by its head. In case of strife, they chose their bravest warrior to lead them and obeyed him strictly. But once the conflict was ended, they literally sent him about his business. In the intervals of peace, it was the priest or head magician who had the most authority and influence.
That was a statement from Will Durant's book, The Story of Civilization, referring to the habits and customs of earliest man.
This is Face to the Future, a new transcribed series on this station produced in cooperation with the North American Air Defense Command. Its conductor is Del Vina, well-known broadcaster, author, lecturer, a lady of adventure as well. It's Face to the Future, and here is our hostess, Del Vina.
Welcome again to Face to the Future. It's the nature of man that he puts off seeing the doctor until he's ill or in pain, the dentist until he has cavities, and the insurance man until he feels he can afford it or really needs it. History is likewise filled with occasions in which he has been inclined only to rely on military advice and strength when he hears the first explosion, signaling the beginning of war. Then the age-old cry goes up, "Why didn't somebody tell us these things when there was time to do something about it?" Usually, plenty of people have been saying these things. In the spring of 1955, after a speech by the Continental Air Defense Commander in Los Angeles, only Walter Winchell paid much attention.
Reporters report to the people, Los Angeles, California. General B.W. Chidlaw is the chief of the Continental Air Defense Command. General Chidlaw this week declared that in the not-too-distant future, robot bomber planes would be a reality. He said they can cruise at supersonic speeds of 1,500 to 2,200 miles per hour, and that within 10 years, the Reds would have the ability to develop an intercontinental missile with an 8,000 to 16,000 miles per hour speed capable of bombing any American city. These powerful Red robots, he added, would be only 30 minutes by air from Soviet sites. 30 minutes by air from Soviet sites. For reporting the very same news in much more conservative language, 6 years before Korea, this reporter was called an hysterical alarmist and warmonger on many American editorial pages.
That was in the early spring of 1955, and General Chidlaw, now retired, was functioning as America's first air defense commander-in-chief. He said, within 10 years. And on January 21st, in 1960, legions of other commentators were reporting a fact.
From Moscow today comes the announcement that the Russians fired a rocket 7,760 miles into the Central Pacific. It fell less than a mile and a quarter from its calculated target. It traveled at the speed of 16,150 miles an hour.
The distance the rocket traveled is interesting to any North American concerned with the safety of himself and his family, because it means that all of the continent, down to and including the Panama Canal Zone, is within range. The fact that an air defense commander could predict the time period in which this would happen 5 years before it did means that such professional advice merits attention, because the time lag to develop military hardware as the equalizer is long. Today, however, there are many who argue in behalf of offensive striking power at the expense of everything else, particularly complementary defensive weapons, which would actually protect the people of North America while the offensive strikes were being made upon an enemy. You may remember in an earlier segment of Face to the Future that Colonel R.L. Gould said,
"From where I sit here in the Combat Operations Center, of the North American Air Defense Command in Colorado Springs, Colorado. It is easy to see we need some fast, hard work to provide us with a means of fighting off an intercontinental ballistic missile attack. This means we not only have to have the weapon, which can move fast enough to do it, but we need the improved radar to see the missile and the guidance system to ensure its destruction.
It's pretty well understood by everyone that the combined efforts of the free world, in the military sense, particularly in Canada and the United States, intend that military power exists in peace to preserve that peace. It has the secondary capability of giving a fighting, decisive account of itself should peace fail us or the policy of war deterrence fail us. In the latter case, most people know that the strategic air power of America would, if we were attacked, launch itself to destroy targets in the aggressor country. But one stark fact remains. North America would have been attacked first. Your sole protection, if this war would come, would be the arsenal of the North American Air Defense Command. To discuss this military element so vital to our safety, I asked NORAD's Commander-in-Chief, General Lawrence S. Cutter, to describe it.
NORAD is a air defense command of Canadian and American forces. It consists of the air defense elements of the United States Army, the United States Navy, the United States Air Force, and the Royal Canadian Air Force. And its mission is a very simple one. It is to defend North America against air attack. To accomplish that mission, we have some 200,000 people, a little more than 200,000, involved day after day, around the clock, in the air defense of North America, and an additional 70,000 or so reserve, National Guard, and other military air defense units, which we can call up in an emergency. These people, something like 270,000, are based in some 700 different places.
Where are these places?
In North America, the 700 places extend from the Arctic coast southward to the southern border of the United States, from Midway Island in the mid-Pacific, on eastward to the Azores in the eastern Atlantic.
How capable are the forces of the Soviet Union at this time?
The Soviet Air Force, I have seen recently in radar screens in the Pacific from northern Japan on down through Okinawa. We've watched them training. We watch them at work. They're big and they're good. The bombers of the Soviet Air Force comprise a serious threat to security in North America. That's the prime threat today. There is another threat. The ballistic missile of the Russian is today a threat. It is a secondary one, but a real threat. It won't be long, in my opinion. It will be within 2 or 3 years that the manned bomber of Russia and the Russian ballistic missile become approximately equal threats. And I think it's quite likely in the later 60s that we'll find the ballistic missile of the Russian, the prime threat, the manned bomber, the secondary threat. But I'd like to point the fact that then as now, we have two threats. We have a requirement for defense against both. The fact that the manned bomber in the later 60s becomes a secondary threat does not mean that it becomes a threat to be ignored. It can be secondary but still fatal. There are two threats.
The world has recently been treated to a whole parade of statements by Khrushchev about junking bombers, cutting forces, and other seemingly peaceful actions. Is this true?
Yes, he did. He said bombers were obsolete and navies were made to be sunk. Mr. Khrushchev has many opinions. This is only one of them that I do not subscribe to.
Do you think he really believes he has an obsolete Air Force?
I'm not a bit sure he's told his Air Force that. From their performance on the radar screens, they don't know they're obsolete.
The job of providing national and international security is as exacting and demanding as any other profession. As a dentist can warn of an approaching cavity, the military man can warn of a weapons or missile lag. Whether the dentist is called for an appointment for preventive measures or whether you become concerned for your safety as a citizen in time, calls for individual response. Up ahead lies the year 2000, and your children who enter kindergarten this fall will be 45 then, making decisions of professionally high order. I've asked NORAD planner Colonel Dick Carlisle for predictions of the military implications of that time.
As military forces are now deployed in depth on the Earth's surface, they will be so deployed outward into space. We will be required to operate militarily in space as well as in the atmosphere. Manned and unmanned vehicles and space stations will be in orbit around the Earth for surveillance and communications purposes, and to control and direct offensive operations employing weapon systems both from space and from the surface of the Earth. Perhaps by the year 2000, bases in other parts of the solar system will be in the planning stages. At any rate, soon the term aerospace defense will be as commonplace as that of air defense. It will be infinitely more complex, but mastery of its effective application will be essential for man's safety.
So of all the indivisible considerations as we face the future, none is apt to equal the timeless concern of man that he and his family be secure, safe above all from a surprise attack as he pursues his daily life and all it holds for him. The military power he advocates in his behalf is dedicated to all his interests, ensures his nation's growth, and in deterring an enemy, determines how fulsome the future may be. This is Delvina, thanking you for being with me through the 13 programs, of which this is the final one, as we have put our face to the future.
Face to the Future has been a transcribed series on this station produced in cooperation with the North American Air Defense Command.